This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. John Williams here. Pete Zimmerman is here, too. He's our producer. And Ben Wink joins us, economy reporter for Business Insider. Thanks for joining us again, Ben. Let's start with the jobs claims. What are the numbers this week?
Yeah, so for another week, we are down at a pandemic-era low. We had 281,000 jobless claims filed last week. And then same thing with continuing claims. That fell to 2.24 million. Now, that counts Americans who are applying for recurring jobless aid. And that's another pandemic low. Both of those beat estimates. And so we're starting to see, after claims hovered at pretty elevated levels through September, we're back on the decline. And that's great. That shows that people are either getting back into work or there are just fewer people being laid off.
How does 2.24 million compare to 2019? What's a pre-pandemic number?
Yeah, so that's closer to between 1.5 and 1.75 million. That's the norm. And so on one hand, yes, we've made tremendous progress towards bringing that number down and getting the labor market to a more normal state, but we're by no means at a full recovery yet. You look at the job growth that we've seen in August and September, and that was just way below estimates. And pretty disappointing. But that was obviously a story of how the Delta wave was hitting hiring and job creation. Whereas, you know, this is, I think, as we've seen virus cases decline, we've seen the same sort of improvement in jobless claims.
But how do you roll off the jobless claims list? I guess one way would be you get a job. Another way would be that your benefits expired and you're no longer getting unemployment benefits. Is that the list we're talking about?
Yeah, and we're also, you have to keep, you know, also consider that, you know, there's always churn, right? Obviously, through the pandemic, there's been way more than usual, but as that, the weekly claims number declines, that could just be showing that there's more. So that amount of churn is getting closer to the levels that we saw before the pandemic. But I did speak to an economist who did say a few weeks ago that there's a good chance that maybe we are stuck at these elevated numbers just because more people know about jobless aid, unemployment insurance. And so now that more people know about those programs because of the improvements that we saw during the pandemic, we might just have more people applying because before, fewer people knew that these benefits even existed.
Really? The people who were eligible for unemployment benefits weren't claiming them because they didn't know they were there?
Yeah, and each state has their own criteria. And so, you know, if there was some confusion as before as to, you know, if I'm eligible in this state, am I also eligible if I move to another state? And so now that, you know, the federal government's boost to unemployment insurance, that expired back in September. But we had, you know, this major benefit. It was $600 a week at one point, then it shrank to $300 a week. We had that around through so much of the pandemic. And probably led a lot of people to realize, wait a second, this is something that I should look into a bit more.
Yeah, well, no kidding if the money is there. Although, in order to be eligible or to be a recipient, you have to demonstrate that you can't find work. You have to, isn't that the theory? Isn't that the practice? You got to be looking for work to get unemployment?
Of course, and that's a big part of why we've seen that coming down, because we have more than 10 million job openings still. And as virus cases have been declining, there's less of that fear around going out, maybe interviewing for a job in person or going and working at an in-person job that you might not have considered before back when you were worried or more worried about the virus.
Well, I know it's not a perfect match, but I mean, the unemployment, the jobless claims should be zero because there are more jobs available out there than there are people looking, although people that not all of those jobs some of those jobs require skills that some people don't have. But I wonder if this is also part of the phenomenon here, and that is that some people, their unemployment benefits having expired, fall off the jobs, the weekly job list because they don't want to go back to work. They'll live with less. I wonder if it's not necessarily people taking more jobs as it is people just choosing not to work.
Yeah, I was actually just speaking with someone about this for a story that I'm working on. It'll probably be up this weekend. But there are certain industries where absolutely the amount of aid seen or given out by the government during the pandemic was so much more than their regular salary that they still have quite a bit of financial cushion, even if they've been jobless through much of the health crisis. And so You know, certain sectors, looking at leisure and hospitality, and other, you know, low, relatively low wage and relatively low hour jobs. Those are the ones, a retail trade as well. Those are the ones where they might be sitting on that financial cushion and using that to maybe spend some more time looking for work or not looking for work and waiting until the pressure is a bit greater. But even then, you know, that's a finite resource. And so we'll see in the coming weeks whether a bunch more people, you know, use the rest of their financial cushion and go back into seeking work or settle in for, you know, being jobless. But at the moment, it seems like, you know, because we've seen these claims decline pretty steadily, we are seeing improvement. It just might not be as fast as some people might have predicted.
It's all at businessinsider.com, and I just want to read a headline. I'm sorry we didn't get more time for it here, but you can read it online at businessinsider.com. In one day, Elon Musk made $37 billion and slammed Democrats' plan to tax billionaires. Here's what he meant when he said the government will come for you. It's an interesting perspective on this. You can read it at businessinsider.com. Nice to talk to you today, Ben.
Likewise. Always appreciate you having me.
Ben Wink, Abrar Al-Hidi joins us, staff reporter at CNET. Let's talk about some of the tech news out there. Abrar, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Catch me up on TikTok and YouTube and Snap and child safety. What's the news here?
Yeah, all three companies showed up to a congressional hearing earlier this week, essentially saying that they really prioritize child safety and talking about the initiatives that they put in place to have parents be more engaged on those platforms. But lawmakers aren't really buying it. There are a lot of concerns, like with, for example, with Snap, there are issues where children have access to purchasing drugs, and that's one of the issues that lawmakers brought up. With YouTube, some lawmakers brought up issues with people having access to content about suicide and self-harm. So these are all things that lawmakers really want these companies to crack down on. And the companies keep saying, you know, we're doing our best. This is, you know, something that we care deeply about. But it seems that they're not really seeing eye to eye on this issue.
Reminds me a little bit about Facebook. And people say you've got to eliminate hate speech, or Donald Trump's pushing the crowd on January 6th. And now they're reinvestigating what Facebook did and didn't do. But like that, I feel about limiting the access of minors, say, to certain sites or portals, is, it sounds to me, almost impossible to do. How do you know? How do they do this?
It's very hard. And one of the troubling things was a couple months ago, there were reports about Instagram launching Instagram for Kids. And that was kind of postponed, and they shut that down. But it seems, you know, reports say that that's not something that Adam Mosseri, the CEO of Instagram, is ready to let go of completely. So these platforms are always driven to find ways to enhance user engagement, increase user engagement, and they want as many eyeballs as possible on their products. And so it's really hard to juggle, as we saw with this fallout from Facebook this week and last week. You know, it's really hard to juggle you know, the growth of your platform in addition to the social well-being of all users, and particularly those who are younger.
Well, listen, I'm not working for them, but just for instance, when you're buying or when you're looking at alcohol content on online, sometimes it says you have to be 18 in order to view this content. Click here if you're 18. Okay. You know, that's about all we got for you. But again, I don't know what else they could do to ensure that a 17-year-old isn't lying about that. We'll leave that for a moment and go on to Macy's. Their shares, or they are sharing a preview of their Black Friday deals. Can I shop Macy's now?
You can. So there are already some deals that are available, things on fashion, jewelry. They're kind of giving this like early sneak peek. And this is something that a lot of companies are doing. So even Walmart, for example, quote unquote, leaked its Black Friday deals early. And these are things that you can kind of have access to certain products. You can kind of see how much things will cost. The thing is, starting November 3rd for Macy's is when a lot of these deals and early specials will become available. But if you, you know, really want to catch the Black Friday deals, you're going to have to wait until around November 23rd, the week of Thanksgiving. But starting early next week, you'll have access to a lot of these deals from Macy's, Walmart, Target has already started deals early. And this is all in an effort to ensure that with supply chain shortages, you'll be able to get the products that you need, and they'll be able to sell what they want to sell.
Why is CNET writing about Dune? It had a big week. What are you saying?
Yeah, so it had a milestone opening box office, so it hit $40 million, which was better than the previous record, which was for Godzilla versus Kong. And so this is, you know, it's interesting just because this was a film that launched in theaters in addition to on HBO Max. So a lot of filmmakers are hesitant about this because they're worried it'll mess with the box office numbers. But this was a good sign. And with, you know, the sequel coming, you know, perhaps this is something that can continue with future films.
Let's skip over to the Tesla story. The prices are going up on electric vehicles.
Yeah, so prices are going up as much as $5,000 for certain cars. So these price increases are for the Model S and the Model X, in addition to the Model 3 and the Model Y. So these, you know, this, it's not clear why exactly this is happening, but it could also be because of these supply chain shortages, the rising cost of materials. But also, you know, even as the company raises prices, which is done before, demand just continues to skyrocket. So, you know, it's not a bad deal for Tesla to just keep bumping up those prices.
One last thing. The Pentagon Papers of the tech world may be the Facebook papers. CNET published a bit of a guide or some advice on how to review this. What are you all saying about that?
Yeah, we have a really helpful guide on our website that essentially lists all the publications that have been writing about the Facebook pages. And so these stories touch on everything from, you know, misinformation on Facebook to dangers for teenagers. So if you go to our website, you'll see a list of all the outlets that have been writing about this content.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now. So revelations from the Facebook papers, what the employees were saying, the tactics that were used, which were deemed hostile or disrespectful. If you care about Facebook or are interested in this issue, there it is. It's CNET.com. Nice to talk to you today, Abrar. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Abrar Al-Hidi is a staff reporter at CNET. Rebecca Ryan's our next guest, economist and professional futurist at RebeccaRyan.com. Rebecca, welcome back to the show.
Hi, John. Good to be with you.
What's a futurist do?
Well, you all know of historians who study the past and journalists like yourself who report on what's happening in the moment. And futurists, professional futurists, study trends to anticipate what's possible in the future.
And if you say, okay, I'll use that and apply it to the business world, what are you seeing? What's the trend in the future? And how do you define the future?
Well,
next year or this month or what?
That is a professional futurist question, is what is the domain or the time horizon that we're even talking about? Yeah. With my clients and on our team, we're looking through the end of 2022 right now, just because there's so much disruption. Prior to the pandemic, we were doing 5, 10, and sometimes 20-year forecasts. But with, you know, with the disruption that's happening now, we've got to shorten the time horizon.
So really, what do you say about through 2022? What challenges or opportunities do businesses see?
Right. So businesses that have some money in the coffers should be making the kinds of investments that are going to help them leapfrog. So all of us who are business owners, I own a business too, we all have that list of things that we know we need to invest in, right? It could be technology. It could be keeping our superstar employees. It could be any of those things. Now is the time to do that. This is going to create a leapfrog, or almost like a trampoline effect for a lot of businesses. But basically, the future in the U.S. for business in the Midwest and in the U.S. is that things are going to continue to be jerky or spiky through 2022. Why? Because when we turned the economy off in March of 2020, we kind of shut off the lights and walked out the door. But turning the lights back on is not as easy. So we are finding a lot of hiccups in supply chain and so forth, and we're going to just need to be ready for that.
Phone is starting to cut out there. I don't know if you are. I'm going to pot her down for just a moment, Pete. You heard her, and then you heard us in the background as well. I'll bring her back up here in a second, but we're talking right now on a phone line with Rebecca Ryan. She's an economist and a professional futurist. She's forecasting trends for business owners. You know, I also expected, Rebecca, that our conversation would talk a little bit about the needs or expectations of employees going back into the offices or staying at home for that matter. What are you saying about that?
Well, this is, I think, a big surprise for a lot of people. We thought that employers would sort of flood back in, and the opposite has happened. The quits rate, which is the rate at which employees are voluntarily leaving, has set records in April, in July, and again in August. And this shows confidence on the part of employees. They believe that if they sit it out, they can find something better. And many employees are starting new businesses. So our new business start rate is very high. And as an economist, taking a big picture view, that's wonderful for the economy. The economy in a capitalist society like we have, it benefits when there are new ideas and entrepreneurs and new businesses starting up. So long term, I'm bullish, but short term, this is really a disruption for employers.
Yeah, I could see how you'd be skittish, especially even if you're flush, you said, and you need to make an investment. In fact, I'm thinking, okay, if I'm going to start a business or expand my company, rather than renting more office space, I need to be ready to buy everybody home computers and extra cell phones and printers. Is that maybe what you're telling your clients as well?
Well, most of our clients have already done that. You know, people are astonished that we were able to pivot as quickly as we could to work from home. What I'm telling our clients now are this. The results are in, and 86% of those who are sitting on the sidelines right now, not yet returning to work, are saying they want flexibility, not necessarily work from home. Only 32% of those surveyed said they want work from home. They want flexibility. So what our clients are doing is they're making alternative work arrangements available to more people, which is to say, hey, if you need to work from home a few days a week, or you want to work in the office a few days a week, we want to meet you where you're at. But for those employers and workplaces where you can't do remote work, what we're seeing our clients do is overstaffing. So instead of hiring to be at 80% capacity, and maybe we'll overwork our 80% of our employees, they're hiring at 110% or even 115, 120%, so that as workers need that time off to get a parent to a doctor appointment or that time off to pick their kid up from school because maybe there's been a COVID outbreak, they've got the flexibility to do that. Another, John, a really interesting signal that we're starting to see is the proliferation of apps like When I Work, which is an app that allows employees, for example, shift workers, right? So I'm thinking of like people who work in grocery stores or, you know, who work on shifts in retail establishments and so forth. They have the ability to, you know, outline their preferred schedule and then work with each other if they need to cover shifts or part of shifts. This is genius in a way because it allows employees to work it out with each other rather than having to go through the manager or the scheduling director to do those things, which if anybody's ever been in that position, you know you can never make everybody happy. And this app gives people the opportunity to talk with each other rather than with the manager.
Supervisors and HR people like that? They're willing to give up that authority?
I think in some ways they're welcoming it. It is requiring more trust.
Yeah.
You know, it requires more trust on the part of a supervisor or an HR manager to allow their employees to work it out amongst themselves. But one of the things that I think employees demonstrated to their bosses is during the pandemic, productivity did not slip. In fact, it increased. So employees have proven that they are able and willing to do the job in extreme circumstances.
Yeah, I don't know if that surprises me or even encourages me, but my take on what happened in the last almost 2 years now is that people worked harder than ever, maybe to save their skin, but they were at home and they were putting in more than 8-hour days. I don't know that that's healthy for people.
Yeah, longer term, I do think we're even starting to see some of that. You know, I don't have science on this, but what I know about human behavior is that when we feel afraid, we reach for things that we can control. You know, like if you start falling down a set of stairs, or here in the Midwest, right, we know black ice, right? You try to get control over your car on black ice. You try to get control over your slip on the stairs. And I think work was one of those things that people felt like they could kind of control during the pandemic. They could work harder. And but now we are starting to see some of the knock-on effects of that, which is burnout, a little bit of additional anxiety, and some depression.
Rebecca Ryan is an economist and professional futurist. RebeccaRyan.com. Nicely done, Rebecca. Let's talk again.
Thanks, John. Take care.
We appreciate your help on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Construction demand drove third quarter sales higher at Caterpillar, as did rising demand from miners and other heavy industry as the global economy emerges from the pandemic. Revenue climbed 25% to $12.4 billion. The construction industry was hit by the spread of COVID-19 like all others, but the pandemic did drive housing and construction demand as people sought larger or newer places to live. Mining and construction took off this year as well as industries began to elevate production. McDonald's Rewards program has enrolled more than 21 million U.S. customers since its launch in July. That helped the company drive higher sales in its third quarter. The My McDonald's Rewards program offers users enhanced speed and discounts that accumulate over time. McDonald's says the program will help it deepen its relationship with customers, using data from their visits to inform marketing decisions. McDonald's has been enticing customers to sign up for the program with daily deals and introductory offers of 1,500 points. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander has the business of food.
Yes, sir. I get a lot of emails. I know you do, too. Steve Alexander at WGNRadio.com, by the way. And one a few days back was about a promo Stan's Donuts is doing. A welcome back Wednesday kind of thing, and it said the contact was the chief doughboy of Stan's, Rich Labriola. Hold on a second, I thought. I haven't been by Labriola's Italian restaurant on the just off the Mag Mile for quite a while. Did it become a victim of the pandemic and Rich took another job with Stan's? Well, here to answer those questions is
Richard Labriola, Chief Doughboy.
Okay, Mr. Doughboy, let's begin with Labriola's. Still open and going strong?
Yeah, the restaurant on Michigan Avenue is doing very well. You know, given all that's happened, we're doing extremely well, actually. Refreshing to see people coming back out and everything.
Well, that's good. I know a lot of the restaurants downtown are happy to see people start to come back and hope more do. So how did you become Chief Doughboy for Stan's Donuts?
Well, I've been Chief Doughboy from my days of owning the Wholesale Artisan Bakery, so that's been around about 25 years. We started Stan's about 8 years ago, so that title still fits.
And who is Stan?
Stan Berman. He had one little store that he worked. He was, larger than life personality, or not was, is. He's still around. He's 92. And, it just became famous because of where it was in Los Angeles near UCLA. And he was across the street from first run world premiere movie theaters and lots of famous actors. And everybody went in there and everybody knows Stan. And I was getting ready to sell my wholesale bakery and wanted to make sure I was figuring out my next life and gave him a call. And we hit it off. And we have 15 stores in Chicago. And yeah, it was a good story of just out of the blue calling somebody up and becoming good friends.
What's your favorite donut, Rich?
I hate to say it, but it's the most boring one. It's just a glazed donut. The glazed donut is the centerpiece of someone's skill. If that one's good, then you can be assured that everything else after that's going to be good. It's not easy to make a great glazed donut.
Chief Doughboy, Rich Labriola. At the Chicago Board of Trade, mixed bag soybeans are down 3, corn is up a nickel, and wheat's trading about 12 cents higher right now. At the Merck, some unusual activity in hogs. Futures are up about 4% right now. From the farm to your belly.
Chocolate.
You got it, Homer. Today is National Chocolate Day. Mm-hmm. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch with my favorite headline of the week, Amy.
Which one is that?
This is a CNN story. There's now a McRib NFT. and what are we even doing anymore?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I thought this like a very funny approach to how this story was reported, because the reporter kind of took the same tack. Indeed. So you and I have talked a little bit about NFT, non-fungible tokens, which is like a digital piece of artwork, more or less. But super fans of the McRib, which will make its debut nationwide on Monday, it's coming back. You can get a McRib NFT now. What you might do with a McRib NFT, that I don't know. that would be up to said superfan.
And there would only be one, right? I mean, it would be a single thing, correct?
Well, CNN reported that McDonald's has created, they use the word handful of them. So, let's say 5 or 6 of them. So there'll be, just a small group of these special owners of this McRib NFT, I think. I had to do a double take on that story when I saw it too. I thought, wait a minute, what who is going to do that? So that's who I want to hear from. I want to hear from somebody who's like, you know what? I'm in. I'm heck yeah. I'm going to buy that. I'm going to do that. I want to make a rib NFT.
Coca-Cola sold something like an NFT, four of them, right?
Yep, that's right. We've seen a lot of companies kind of getting on that bandwagon and doing, you know, things like that. The most interesting NFT use that I've seen there's a couple of videos, I think we all know them, of young kids. There's one of two British kids saying, oh, Charlie bit my finger. There's that one. The kids grew up and they wanted to take that video down and kind of reclaim that. And so that became an NFT. And they sold, like, one person can have that video and that is it. And they made quite a bit of money on that. So I think that's kind of an interesting use of it. McRib, jury's still out.
A longboarder who was last year skateboarding to a Fleetwood Mac song issued an NFT. As I recall, that did not happen because Fleetwood Mac said, wait a minute, that's our song and you can't make an NFT out of it. A woman claims strawberry Pop-Tarts do not have enough strawberries.
See, that's the headline I thought maybe you were going to go for first.
Yeah, you paused. Like, I thought, well, what else could you possibly think I'm talking about? Actually, it's a horse race here. That's a good one, too.
Yeah, exactly. So there's actually two lawsuits happening. One is from New York, one is from Illinois, and both lawsuits claim, hey, Pop-Tarts is actually not all it says it is. So strawberry Pop-Tarts apparently contains less than 2% of dried strawberries, pears, and apples, and then red dye. So it's not that much strawberry. And both plaintiffs have said that's misleading, and I wouldn't have bought that. The lawsuit in New York is seeking $5 million in damages. So I'm going to watch this one because I'm very curious to see quite how that plays out. You know, we do sometimes hear a lawsuit and go, okay, that seems $5 million. That seems like quite a bit of money for, you know, what's in a Pop-Tart. But nonetheless, it really does. Sometimes these lawsuits end up being sort of precedent setting for transparency around food labeling. And as more and more companies are taking food allergies seriously and things like that, sometimes these lawsuits do progress a little further than we think they will. So I'll be very curious to see how that one shakes out.
2% of a strawberry Pop-Tart is strawberries. That's a lot more than I thought was in there, to be honest with
you. I know. That's what I said, too. I was like, oh, I'm surprised it's that much.
Yeah, hooray. I'll go get some. The global chip shortage is where? What's the news on that front?
Yeah, so yesterday we saw some earnings from GM and Ford, and both of them really said that, you know, disappointing earnings for them. They both said they were down due to that chip shortage. They just weren't able to hit the standards of productivity that they had hoped to hit. But also then today we hear from Volkswagen and Stellantis just about the same thing, just saying this is a really challenging quarter and talking about how they've been impacted. So, you know, earlier in, I think maybe a month or two ago, when we really started talking about how this was impacting the car pipeline, you know, there were dealers that were saying, hey, we're going to get just a fraction of the inventory that we normally get. And there are particular cars that were feeling that more than others. But that really continues with, I think it's so interesting to just watch supply chains and how that's impacting in different industries in so many different ways. There was some reporting today in Cranes about how that's hitting the home supply business of home building, of lumber, and all the different things you need to build a home and how that's impacting that. So it's just another area where we're continuing to see, you know, the shakeout from how the supply chain was impacted, and in this case, the car companies.
We talked to a logistics guy on my show earlier today, and he said he doesn't see the supply chain issue resolving itself until the end of 2023. And I said, well, so one more year. And he said, no, I said 2023.
Yeah.
Mid to the end of 2023. So 18 months to two full years, if the math is right. Oh, no, two and a half. Well, yeah, about two more years. A minute left maybe for one last story about Google rolling out tools to help miners delete photos. What is that all about?
Yeah, so the big social media giants have been under a lot of scrutiny in terms of what they're offering to younger users. And so Google has rolled out a tool that's going to let miners remove photo content a little bit easier. So that does exist. Anybody could request the removal. If, say, there's a photo of you on the internet, it's got your address in it or something, you can have that taken down, things like that. Or if it's, you know, leaking some kind of personal information that could be damaging to you, Google will usually help users. And there's a form online that's been available for some time, but they're expanding that a little bit. So this new form lets people, you can flag a URL and say, you know, this is a photo of a miner, we want this taken down. And you know, in the reporting that CNN did, they spoke with a mental health professional that was really talking about this would be a great way for parents to open up conversations with their kids about the importance of you know, what's online about you and monitoring your reputation, especially as you get older and enter the job market and even college admissions, things like that. So now it doesn't take it down, the photo down from the website it's on. So if, say, some website publishes a photo without permission, you'd still have to contact the webmaster to get that taken down, but the photo wouldn't show up in Google search results anymore. So if, say, a college admissions person or a future employer is Googling that person, it wouldn't show up.
I didn't know they did that to begin with, let alone expanding the tools. So I'm glad you're reporting on that as well. Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.